I'd like you to get yourselves comfortable this morning. It might mean you want to slip off your shoes. Perhaps tuck a leg under another leg. Not by standing up like a flamingo. Do you know why flamingos stand on one leg? If they didn't, they'd fall over. Okay, an old joke. Anyway, so I want you to get comfortable this morning because let's start with the story. Okay. Once upon a time, it was back in the days when the judges led Israel. There was a famine in the land. A man from Bethlehem in Judah left home to live in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife's name was Naomi. His sons were named Mahlon and Chilion, all Ephratites from Bethlehem in Judah. They all went to the country of Moab and settled there. Now, the story this morning is a couple. It's about a woman and her mother-in-law. Not the normal stuff we've been dealing with men and recently. You know, Caleb and Joshua fought the battles. Peter and John did fantastic miracles and the such. And here we have a woman with a mother-in-law. And yet, she's one of the most influential women in the whole of history. So, but it's a story of migration. They leave the land they live in because there is a famine. So they go to another country. They leave their family and friends to go to a place called Moab. And I found a little map. Not very good. You can see the kingdom of Judea near the bottom, above the yellow king of Edom. And then to the right, my right, your right, there's the kingdom of Moab. And they travel across the river and they go to this place. And it's not a good place to go. At the moment in time, there was relative peace between Moab and Judah. But this is what it says in Deuteronomy 23. No Ammonite or Moabite or any of their descendants may enter the assembly of the Lord, not even in the tenth generation. For they did not come to meet you with bread and water, talking to the Jews, on your way when you came out of Egypt. And they hired Balaam the son of Beor from Pethor in Aram to pronounce a curse on you. And so these were a people that God rejected. They were despised and hated by the Jews, essentially. Although there was some sort of semblance of peace, they were going to a place where they would not be welcome. It's a story just for today. We see people leaving their countries because of no jobs, no food, fear of war, coming to places around Europe where they are not made welcome. It's a modern story. It's a story about grieving and loss. It's a story about families being completely broken up. And then it ends with an incredible love story. And so, I've got a box of tissues. You women, you've got to fend for yourself, I'm afraid. You've always got tissues. Because I'm going to tell you a secret now, which I don't want going outside these four walls. Okay? I quite like romantic comedy films. And I said to my Louise last night, we sat in bed, I said, I'm quite the romantic, aren't I? And she just laughed. And I still can't work out what sort of laughter it was. And she said, if you say that, I will glare at you. And I can feel this burning sensation in my right ear. But I do, and often on a Sunday afternoon I get home, we've had lunch, I will find some light-hearted comedy, romantic film, and watch it. We sit and watch it, and we both at the end burst into tears. And now, funny sir, I tend to cry nowadays. When my father died back 20-odd years ago, I started to cry. And I find I cry at the simplest of things, even watching Bake Off. Don't ask me why, when they win. So I'm keeping the box here because I think it might be the place to put it. And so we have this story of this family, husband and wife with two children. But the story takes a turn. Elimelech died. And Naomi was left, she and her two sons. The sons took Moabite wives. Now remember, this was a people hated by the Jews. Remember God said, don't marry from the countries around because you start to corrupt who you are. The sons took Moabite wives. The name of the first was Orpah, the second was Ruth. They lived there in Moab for the next 10 years. But then the two brothers, Mahlon and Chilion, died. Now the woman was left without either her young men or her husband. And you have this woman who's gone to another land where she may not be welcome, and now she's widowed. There's nothing I can think more grievous than a mother to outlive her children. She's left with two women that are not Jewish, and being the mother-in-law is not a good position. I was fortunate to have an excellent mother-in-law. I'll say no more, just leave it there before I get into trouble. And loved her to bits. And here she finds herself in this situation. One day, she got herself together and her two daughters-in-law to leave the country of Moab and set out for a home, because she had heard that God had been pleased to visit her people, or his people, in Israel, and to give them food. And so she started out from the place she'd been living, she and her two daughters-in-law with her, on the road back to the land of Judah. After a short while on the road, Naomi told her two daughters-in-law, "Go back. Go home and live with your mothers. May God treat you as graciously as you treated your deceased husbands and me. May God give each of you a new home and a new husband." She kissed them and they cried openly. They said, "No, we're going on with you to your people." This is an amazing mother-in-law, Naomi. She had a care and love for these girls or women that were not her daughters. And if you read on, she says again, "You go." And so Orpah says, "Yes, I'll go back." But Ruth says, "No, I'm going to stay with you. I'm going to go to where you are." And as they journey back, it's quite high risk. Here are two women on a road where there'd be other people, where they would be at risk to physical harm, to sexual attacks and the like. It was not easy. And she says here, as she's on the way, she says, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Bitter." And the name is Mara. And it's quite common, as you saw in recent weeks, Peter was called Cephas, Jesus renamed him Peter. Saul was renamed Paul. And what the Jews would do, supposing you had a very serious illness and you were healed, you would often change your name to show that it was like a new start in life. It was a new beginning. For Saul, when he was converted to Christ, he renamed himself Paul. It was like a new beginning. And here's Jesus saying to Cephas, "No longer will you be called Cephas, but you're going to be called Peter the Rock." And often the name would be changed because something momentous happened in your life. And here Naomi says, "I'm no longer called Naomi, which means pleasant. I'm going to be called Mara, which means bitter. My life is no longer pleasant." She says, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Bitter. The strong one has dealt me a bitter blow. God, I left here full of life and God has brought me back with nothing but the clothes on my back. Why would you call me Naomi? God certainly doesn't. The strong one ruined me." And so Naomi was back, and Ruth the foreigner with her, back from the country of Moab. They arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. I don't know if you've heard of the town Bethlehem, just a few miles outside of Jerusalem. But we'll touch on that later on. And they come to Bethlehem. Now, Dave in here represents Food Bank. Food Bank is not a new invention. It is around in the time of the Bible here. Because if we go on, another picture. What they had then was that they'd be gleaning the fields, picking all the wheat. And of course, there were good pickers. Some would be left on the ground. And what the law allowed was people who had no food, who could follow behind and pick up the wheat that wasn't collected by the farmers' workers. And they had right to take it and go and make their own bread. It was an early form of food bank. There was provision for the poor laid down by God. And it says it so happened that Naomi had a relative by marriage, a man prominent and rich connected with Elimelech's family. His name was Boaz. One day, Ruth, the Moabite foreigner, she's a foreigner in a strange land, which gets being reiterated, said to Naomi, "I'm going to work. I'm going out to glean among the sheaves, following after some harvester who will treat me kindly. Naomi said, go ahead, dear daughter. So she decides, we've got to have food. We haven't got any money but the clothes on her back. I'm going to go and get some food. So she set out. She went and started gleaning in a field, following in the wake of the harvesters. Eventually, she ended up in the part of the field owned by Boaz, her father-in-law Elimelech's relative. A little later, Boaz came out from Bethlehem, greeting his harvesters. God be with you, they replied, and God bless you. Boaz asked his young servant, who was foreman over the farmhands, who is this young woman? Where did she come from? I reckon she was a stunner. She stood out. I can remember when I was a young man courting Louise, we went on a youth fellowship camp to East Mersey. And there was another camp nearby with lots of boys on it. And I remember some of our young teenagers started talking to these boys. And all these boys said, who's that girl over there? And pointed to my future wife. And all these girls said, she's already taken. This woman stood out. The foreman said, why, that's the Moabite girl. The one who came with Naomi from the country of Moab. She asked permission. Let me glean, she said, and gather among the sheaves following after your harvesters. She's been at it steady ever since from early morning until now without so much as a break. Then Boaz spoke to Ruth. Listen, my daughter, from now on, don't go into any other field to glean. Stay right here in this one and stay close to my young women. What he was saying to her, you're safe here. You are safe here. Watch where they are harvesting and follow them. And don't worry about a thing. I've given orders to my servants not to harass you. When you get thirsty, feel free to go and drink from the water buckets that the servants have filled. She dropped to her knees and bowed her face to the ground. How does this happen that you should pick me out and treat me so kindly? Me, a foreigner. Boaz answered her, I heard all about you. Heard about the way you treated your mother-in-law after the death of her husband, and how you left your father and mother in the land of your birth and have come to live among a bunch of total strangers. God reward you well for what you've done, and with a generous bonus besides from God, to whom you've come seeking protection under his wings. She sighed, oh, such grace, such kindness. I don't deserve it. You've touched my heart, treated me like one of your own. I don't even belong here. And you just get the beginning that this man Boaz has suddenly seen this woman. It's like those films, isn't it? You know the boy's going to get the girl, the girl's going to get the boy, but you have to go through an hour and a half of them getting there. And so at lunch break, Boaz said to her, come over here and eat. Eat with some bread, dip it in the wine. So she joined the harvesters. She was picked out. Boaz passed the roasted grain to her. She ate her fill and even had some left over. When she got up back to work, Boaz ordered his servants, let her glean where there's still plenty of grain in the ground. Make it easy for her. Spill some of your grain. Don't be too conscientious. You already get the scene that suddenly this young woman, or older woman now, is tugging at his heartstrings. Better yet, pull some of the good stuff out and leave it for her to glean. Give her special treatment. Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. When she'd threshed out what she had gathered, she ended up with nearly a full stack of barley. She gathered up her gleanings, went back to town and showed her mother-in-law the results of the day's work. She also gave her the leftovers of her lunch. And you go, this is suddenly turning into one of those love stories where you can watch the pattern. Being older, I love watching young courtship. It just makes me smile. I remember back to those romantic days, as I've said, alluded to earlier on. I've seen the glare, darling, I'll say no more. And suddenly, the story takes a change. Because Naomi begins to realise what's happening. It says, one day Ruth's mother-in-law Naomi said to her, my daughter, I must find a home for you, meaning a husband, where you'll be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, Put on perfume and get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know that you're there until he's finished eating and drinking. And when he lies down, note the place where he's lying, then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He'll tell you what to do next. For those of our generation with a corrupt mind, you're expecting now some sexual scene in this romantic film. You're expecting to lie down in the bed of Boaz, and she said he will tell you what to do next. And already your imaginations are running wild. When I was at school, in Markle School, we had a film club on a Saturday morning. And I can remember we went into the lecture theatre, which had raised seats, and we were watching this film. And suddenly, halfway through, the picture went blank. We all turned around, "What's wrong, sir?" He had his hand over the lens. "It's not appropriate for you to watch," as he watched it on his hand. And I never knew what happened in that scene in this particular film. And I feel at this point here, you could quite easily go, well, they're going to have sex and it's going to go the way we are so used to today. And if you were to read the original Hebrew, there are some quite words which might shock you. But if you're that way inclined, that's where you're going to read God's word. But that's not how I read it. This is what goes on to say. "I would do whatever you say," Ruth answered. She trusted her mother-in-law implicitly. Perhaps in the back of her mind, not sure where this was going. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking, it was good in good spirits. He went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. In good spirits, perhaps he had one glass too many, suggesting? I don't know. Not the ideal situation to find yourself as a young woman going to lie down next to a man. He went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned and there was a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I am your servant, Ruth." In the culture at the time, a servant would lie horizontal to the master, lying vertical. It was the position a servant would lie in. She said, "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of my family." It means total nonsense to us. Whatever is this about? Why would he spread the garment? Basically, she's saying, "Let me come under your blanket." That is not what's being said. Essentially, if you go back, she is proposing marriage to Boaz. Strange, it's not February the 29th. Can women propose to men any time of the year? Well, and it comes back, is what he's wearing. The Jews would have a blanket, like a coat they'd wear most of the time to keep them out, and it would have tassels on it. We read in this in Numbers. God spoke to Moses, "Speak to the people of Israel, tell them from now on they are to make tassels on the corners of their garments and to mark each corner tassel with a blue thread. When you look at these tassels, you remember and keep all the commandments of God and not get distracted by everything you feel or see that seduces you into infidelities. The tassels will signal remembrance and observance of all my commandments to live a holy life to God. I am your God, who rescued you from the land of Egypt to be your personal God. Yes, I am God, your God." And the tassels would remind the Jew of who God is and those commandments he was to be obeyed, to be under the authority of God. And so when she lies under the corner, she's under these tassels. She's saying to him, "I want to be under your authority." Now you may say, that's very different. But if God did that, it'd be a great example, wouldn't it? That's what it says in Ezekiel. Here is God talking about the Jews, in particular Jerusalem. The Jews had gone away from God. As he said, they'd prostituted themselves with other faiths and other countries. He said this, "Later I passed by," says God, of the Jews in Jerusalem. "And when I looked at you and saw that you were old enough for love, I spread the corner of my garment over you and covered your naked body. I gave you my solemn oath and entered into a covenant with you, declares the Sovereign Lord, and you became mine. And if it's good enough for God to say, come under the corner of my garment, come under my authority, come under my protection, my grace, because you are mine, you suddenly realise this story of Ruth and Boaz is quite different to EastEnders and the things we see on our television screen about love and sex, etc., etc. Because not only was Ruth honourable, not only was Naomi honourable to her daughter-in-law, Boaz was an honourable man. And so, she comes under it. Now, of course, I've given you one example of the Lord. There's another example in the New Testament of Jesus. There's a woman who's got a bleed, as you may know. There's a big crowd, and she says, if only I could touch the hem of his garment. Just then, a woman who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak. She said to herself, if only I touch his cloak, I'll be healed. Jesus turned and saw her. Take heart, daughter, he said. Your faith has healed you. And the woman was healed at that moment. Do you want to have a guess which part of the garment she touched? She touched the corner where the tassels were. She touched it and came under the authority of Jesus. I'm trusting in you, Jesus, because you are God. And there was healing and restoration. If you remember the story, there's masses of crowd, and the disciples say, well, Jesus says, who touched me? And disciples go, well, lots of people have touched you. And he goes, no, somebody touched me differently. The woman grabbed the hem of his blanket round his neck, and the power of God reached out. So, we have this story. She sort of proposed, I'd love to be your husband. I'm submitting to your authority. And now we transfer over to the last quarter of an hour of the film. Suddenly the man's gone some other direction, the woman's gone. You think, how are they going to get back together? But some coincidence happens, suddenly the women and the man. I watched Sleepless in Seattle yesterday, the last half hour. I don't know if you've seen the film. And they're right, they've never seen each other, but they're falling in love, and they go to the Empire State Building. And she says, oh, it's him, it's her. And they come together and they hold hands, they go off for a meal, and life is happy ever after. And you get this sense of what's going to happen at the end of this book. Well, it's not what you would expect. So meanwhile, Boaz decides to take into his own actions because he is a relative of Naomi or her husband Elimelech, but he's not first in line. And what the ruling was, if a woman was widowed, then the brother would take her as his wife. There was that constant, by God, protection of all. Not just the food bank, there was provision of care for the wives, the widows, the children. And so meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat down there just as the guardian redeemer he had mentioned came along. The guardian redeemer was the nearest of kin who was the redeemer kinsman. His job was to redeem this woman and bring her back into his family. Boaz said, come over here, my friend, and sit down. So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, sit here, and they did so. Then he said to the guardian redeemer, Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to her relative Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention. So is Boaz now giving Ruth to another man? Is this film going to end in the... Is it going to be the wrong matching up? Because somehow it's got confused here. I thought of bringing... He didn't have to say anything. Could just marry. Why did he have to tell this man? This is no longer a comedy. This is where this starts to come out, because this is not how I want the story to end. I want you to pay attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of this... seated here, by the land and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you're not, tell me, so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I'm next in line after you. I will redeem it, he said. I will take it all. She will be mine. Except Boaz had been quite subtle here. He just talked about the land. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. At this, the guardian redeemer said, then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it. What would my other wife say? Now, in the early times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. That's what they did. Quite common is take off your sandals as a sign of completion, a sign of end. Remember when Jesus set the disciples out two by two? And if you don't get accepted by the village, take off your sandal and shake off the dust. It's the end. It's the conclusion. It's the agreement. So the guardian redeemer said to Boaz, buy it yourself. And he removed his sandal. It is sealed. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, today you are witness that I have bought from Naomi all the property Elimelech, Chilion and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today you are my witnesses. And you go, it's got a happy ending. Fantastic. The man gets the girl gets the man. Then the elders and all the people at the gate said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, the famous wives of the past, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. And through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, one of the 12 tribes. Through your offspring, the Lord gives you this young woman. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Why is Ruth so important? I'd like to read to you Matthew chapter 1. The genealogy of Jesus Christ. This is the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac the father of Jacob. Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah the father of Perez and Zerah, whose name was Tamar. Perez the father of Hezron. Hezron the father of Ram. Ram the father of Aminadab. Aminadab to the father of Nashon. Nashon the father of Salmon. Salmon the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King. Ruth was, as they were saying, the Jews, the mother of Jesus. It's an incredible story. Not just the fact of Ruth being the line. She was a complete reject. She had no right to live in Israel. She had no right to be in the line of Jesus because she wasn't even Jewish. But a redeemer kinsman came along, saved her and redeemed her. A family member of her husband took her in and made her a family member of this family. And isn't that exactly what Jesus did to us? A redeemer kinsman. I was not part of God's family. And Jesus saw me and took me as his wife. That's the picture we see in Revelation. Jesus is the groom, the church is the bride. And it's a beautiful love story as a visual aid of what Jesus and the church are doing. Louise is still alive. She's outlived her mother. So I can't imagine what it was like if Louise had died, I had to then have my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law was very kind and loving towards me. I can never deny that. Not all of us have good mother-in-laws like I did. But here was a woman called Ruth who trusted a woman from another nation, trusted her mother-in-law. She could have gone back to her own mother, her own family, and been accepted, but she trusted. And God did amazing things in this love story. He took a hopeless situation where Naomi said, no longer am I called pleasure, I'm going to be called Mara, bitter. Because my life has turned bitter. Because not only now did Ruth have Boaz, but Naomi kept her land. She kept her land. It shouldn't have happened. And God had his hand upon this whole situation. And I love it that all through this book, it keeps calling her Naomi. It doesn't call her bitter. She chose to change her name, but God says, no, you are Naomi. You are pleasant. And therefore, I'm going to keep calling you that. Because although you may not know how the film is going to end, I'm never going to call you bitter. And she felt that her life was not where it should have been. And God had a plan. 3,000 or so years ago. What is the relevancy for you and me today? Do you think your name is pleasant? Your name means bitter. Do you see your life as pleasant? Or do you see it as bitter? Do you think to yourself, I wish I hadn't. I wish I hadn't been born. I wish, I wish, I wish, I wish. And I know people, and there'll be some here, who say that. God says, I want, I want, I want, I want. I want you to know my love. But nobody loves me, you say. I want you to know my joy. I can't have joy in life. I want you to have a hope. My situation's hopeless. I want you to have a friend. Nobody likes me. The devil will just pour lie after lie after lie to tell you how unworthy you are and useless you are. God says, I have a plan. I'm going to make you a bride, whether you're a man or woman here, for a fantastic husband. I'm going to provide for you for the food that you need on your plate. I'm going to make a home for you, not just on this earth, but in my heaven. And Jesus says, I am your Redeemer kinsman. You are part of my family, and I'm going to buy you back. I'm going to pay the price. I don't know how much Boaz had to pay and who it paid it to. I don't know all the legal side. But I do know in terms of Jesus, the price for me to call God my father was his own personal life. And if God is prepared to do that for you and me, he must consider you pretty important. He must consider you pretty important. My grandson was with us the week, and I have a pot on my side of my bed with all these two tuppenny bits and penny bits that I can never get rid of. And so I got asked, Louise, could I give him some of my tuppenny bits? I gave him 5 tuppenny bits to play with. He's had a great time throwing them about the floor and hiding them and all the rest of it and doing things with it. It cost me nothing because they were just waste money. I've got a mountain full of the things. It cost me nothing. When God sent his son, it cost him everything. Everything to redeem you. Is it not surprising that it says when Christ was on the cross and he died, God darkened the earth? God darkened the earth because of the sorrow. The grieving process he saw, like with Naomi when her husband and sons died. I feel it's the time that God understood grief. But boy, he must have parted on Easter morning. The smile on God's face as he rose from the dead and declared to his friends and disciples, the price had been paid. The girl found her man. The bride had the wedding she needed. The woman had security. She had love. She had protection. She had provision. And it's the same thing that God says to you as your Redeemer kinsman. I offer you life. I offer you hope. I offer you protection. I offer you food. I offer you safety. And most of all, I offer you my hand. And I do love in a marriage service when the two come at one point, the couple hold hands as an actual signifying they are one. And when you come to Christ, God reaches out and holds your hand. Can we just have a word of prayer? I'm going to hand back to Martin and the team. Lord, you know I love romantic comedies. You knew that. They just make me smile. But Lord, I know nothing more precious than watching people come to Christ. Nothing brings me more joy than that, Lord, to see people who find Christ for the first time and start that journey. Lord, and see people who are going through issues get restored. Get healed, Lord, because of your love and your grace. It just excites me all the time when I see you changing people's lives, whether they're 10, 20 or 100. And I just thank you, Father. This story of Ruth and Boaz is a fantastic love story. I thank you for Naomi, her just faithfulness. She heard that you were doing something in Israel. She went towards it. And boy, did you do something. So I just thank you, Lord, that I can be here this morning because of my Redeemer kinsman, Jesus Christ. I thank you I can stand in your presence and the protection and the love you give me. And I just pray, Lord, this morning, if there's those who don't know that security in you, Lord, I'm happy to speak to you afterwards. I'm happy to share you what I know, and also through God speaking to your life. Because I believe God has a word for you this morning, and I want to give it to you personally. So if you want to talk afterwards, I'm here.